So hello, friends, and welcome to episode 209 of Self Kind with me, Erica Webb. Today, I want to talk about something a little left field. We're going to dive into some philosophy and the concept of deconstruction and how that can inform our movement practices and this idea of listening to your body, which can kind of sometimes feel a little bit nebulous. I think that this is going to help. Hi, and welcome to Self Kind with me, Erica Webb. This is a podcast about what it means to be, live, and move through a lens of self-kindness. We'll look at the ways self-kindness can underpin our practices in movement, mindfulness, and mindset to support us to be and do the things we so desire in the world. I'm thrilled you're here. Let's get into the show. So we're going to dive into some philosophy, a little bit random, yes, and it's not even yoga philosophy. It is philosophy that stems from, my belief is, literature and human language. And bear with me because I swear it is very relevant and kind of an interesting way of thinking about things. And one of the reasons that I want to talk about this is because when it comes to listening to our body, when it comes to understanding ourselves with more honesty and clarity, sometimes we need to hear about this idea from a bunch of different angles, through a bunch of different windows almost, to start to sense and feel and understand what it means to us and how we can access that. And so when I thought of this particular topic, I thought, you know, this could be one other way of thinking about this that could be helpful for people. So that's kind of the reason why we're going to dive into it. I shared about this idea with my Self-Kind Hub members in their member email last week as well. So it's kind of top of mind. Back in a previous life, I studied a lot. I still do study. But back in a previous life, I was studying the human language and particularly writing. And one of the themes or one of the topics that we talked about has stuck with me ever since. A lot of it I've forgotten, honestly. A lot of it's just like, what did we say? But this one particular theory really stuck with me, and it's something that's kind of informed the way I look at things in lots of different areas of my life. And that's Jacques Derrida's theory of deconstruction. Now, you might be familiar with this. You might be like, why are we talking about philosophy? What has this got to do with anything? But I'm going to go into what I've taken from it. So if you know this theory, you might be like, you're not talking about this correctly, because I'm going to try and apply it to something that is obviously slightly different. And I'm talking about it more through my application of it, I guess, rather than the specifics of how he shared it. So the way that I learned this idea through my studies was that any work of writing, any work of literature, anything that you read and consume has as many meanings and interpretations as it does readers. So a writer might create a book, might create a piece of writing that they put a particular kind of message or intention into. But that is only half the story, because as soon as somebody picks up that piece of writing, that book, whatever, they are going to read it through a lens that is uniquely theirs. And so their interpretation is going to be uniquely theirs. The writer is just one of the players in the construction of the meaning of that text. And I want to apply that idea to movement. Because one of the things that happens with movement is that we often seek out a teacher. We often seek out instruction around movement, whether it be with a physical, whether it be with like a personal trainer, a yoga teacher, Pilates teacher, anything like that, we often seek out teaching. And that's really valuable, right? I am a movement teacher. I absolutely think that that is a valuable pursuit. However, what we can get a little bit stuck in is trying to create a version of the movement that we're instructed to do without any interoception, without any sense of what it feels like to us, but rather just trying to approximate the shape or the movement, etc. And when it comes to this idea of listening to your body, we want to go beyond simply recreating what we see or recreating what we're told to do with our body, recreating that movement in the best approximation we can. We actually want to be more curious about, like, what is my somatic experience like doing this movement. And as a refresher, our somatic experience is the one that we only have access to. It's that inside out awareness of how we feel. It takes into account everything. It takes into account the way that we feel emotionally. It takes into account the things that we have access to sense and feel. It takes into account the things that have happened before, right? So it's not it is a present moment awareness, but it's a present moment awareness that takes account of everything that's come before. And it's very unique. And so if we're experiencing movement through our soma, through our somatic experience, then we are co-creating that movement, even when it is being instructed by another person. It's not as easy to do that, right, as it is to just like be like, well, they bent their elbow, I'll bend my elbow. And I'm not saying that there's not a place for that sort of just more straight up mimic what you see. But when it comes to using our body in a way that helps us to deepen our connection with ourselves, to befriend ourselves more, to be more curious about the messages that our body sends and how we can respond, then I think this idea of being more present in our somatic experience, being more aware of our co-creation role is really, really valuable. This is why you are always the most qualified person in the room to talk to and about your experience. Your experience with movement, what something feels like, what feels good, what doesn't feel good. I wonder if you've ever had an experience where you have said what you feel and someone has disagreed with you, whether that be in a movement context or anywhere else. Like, oh, I think I'm really tired. I don't think I can do any more. Yes, you can. You can absolutely do more. Give me three more. And again, this is not sort of binary. It's not like, well, that's always wrong and the other is always right. But in what ways does that perhaps distance ourselves from what we know to be true for us? There is absolutely value in proving to ourselves that we can do more than we think. Yes. And there is also problematic elements when we are being told that our experience of what is happening to us, in us, isn't true. I'm trying to remember something happened the other day that very much spoke to this. And it's innocent sometimes. I can't remember the story, so that's anticlimactic. But it's innocent, right? Like, oh, you know, you're okay. You're okay. You're like, but I'm not. I feel like I'm dying on the inside. We are so used to having our experience given to us, you know, objectively or subjectively, really, from somebody else. We're so used to almost seeking that interpretation from the outside. And again, sometimes that has great value. But also, you are the greatest expert on your internal experience. One of the things that I want to point out here is that our somatic embodied experience of a movement incorporates things that are both conscious and less conscious, and maybe even unconscious. So when it comes to movement, let's just say you're doing a fitness class and the instructor says, right, we're going to do 50 burpees. So if that was me, my immediate conscious reaction would be like, I friggin' hate burpees. I don't want to do it. I can't do it. I'm not interested. That's like a conscious response. But there might also be other things that are impacting my feeling both about and during that exercise. Some of it might be things like, I haven't had a lot of sleep. I have other stresses that are going on that I'm not necessarily conscious of in the moment, but are absolutely impacting my system. I have spotted someone across the room who, for whatever reason, is bringing up memories about something from the past, and that is subconsciously kind of ruminating in the background. A threat that we're not consciously aware of, but our body has kind of gone, well, this is something to be on the lookout for. And so when we're more in this kind of embodied state where we are willing to be more curious about like, what is our actual experience, then we really are in that more true listening to our body, co-creating through movement space. because yes, it's sometimes lovely to prove to ourselves that we can do things we didn't think that we could do. But it's also very valid to be like, you know what? I'm too tired for this. I hate burpees. I don't want to do it. They don't feel good in my body. They always give me a headache or whatever it might be. Understanding that if we have 50 people in a room all doing the same movement session, all doing the same movement class, there is no way on earth that all 50 of those people are creating the same experience just by recreating what they see the instructor doing. It's never going to be the case, ever. And so we are absolutely co-creating our movement experience. We're taking what is offered to us and we are making sense of it in our bodies for ourselves, leaving out what doesn't work for us, pulling in what does, and adjusting as we need. And it's not always something that we're invited to do, right? So often we feel like we have to manipulate ourselves in order to fit what we see being offered through movement, rather than recognizing that we get to manipulate the movement to suit us and to change what we're doing based on what it is that we need. But the only way we can do that, I think, is when we give ourselves permission to be using that information that only we have access to. And again, some of it's conscious, some of it's unconscious, in order to be utilizing that somatic experience to our advantage. And I think underneath all of this, there is that foundation of curiosity, that foundation of desiring a kind, truthful, honest relationship with ourselves, of being aware of, you know, how does what I'm doing impact how I feel? And do I want to keep doing it? And if we take movement off the table for a moment and just think about the way that we feel in our lives, I think this idea is really valid here too. This idea that there are as many interpretations as there are consumers of any information. Even something that we all witness together, something that we are part of as a collective, and you can take the pandemic as an example of this. We all went through the same global event, but our experiences were not the same. Some people, you know, delighted in that time at home. Some people really suffered and for different reasons. And so we know that this happens, right? We get the sense that, yeah, like there can be one kind of like objective thing that we can say, well, this happened, but it doesn't mean we all have the same experiences. Even being raised by the same parents, we often don't have the same stories, same relationships, same feelings and experiences, even if we were all in the same place. And so we know that we co-create our experience. We are active participants in that. And I think understanding this really helps us to accept, hopefully, that our feelings are valid, that our somatic experience is valid. Your feelings take into account far more than any objective facts, far more. When we hear ourselves saying things like, I shouldn't feel that way, it's so destructive. It's so diminishing because it is denying what you feel. Same with when you're in, you know, a yoga class and you do something and I should be able to do this. Should you? Why? Or it should feel good because it seems to feel good to everybody else. What happens if we actually take our felt experience and make it true, you know, allow it to have its space for truth. And when I say truth, it doesn't mean that it's based, like it doesn't have to be logical, but it can, you know, sometimes we can go, oh, like I logically feel like I shouldn't be upset by this, or I logically feel like this should feel good or whatever. And it doesn't. We don't have to spend all this time like blaming ourselves about that and making it wrong. What happens if instead we sort of go, oh, well, that's interesting. I'm feeling X, Y, Z. I actually also feel like I shouldn't feel like that way. That was bad English. I feel like I shouldn't feel like that. And I'm going to offer myself compassion in this very human moment of feeling that disconnect, right? But I think when we accept that we're always co-creating our experiences, the objective stuff, the, you know, stuff that we're all kind of got access to consume, and then our unique perspective coming in to meet it, we're always going to be having a unique movement experience. We're always going to be having a unique experience of our body. We're always going to be having a unique experience of this life. And so trust what you feel. trust it unless that's destructive, right? So when I say trust what you feel, if some of the things that you're feeling is that like you're not good enough, that you're always failing, that is not going to lead you in the direction of what you want. So, you know, those things, we can take that information and we can say, okay, well, I'm having the feeling that like I'm constantly failing. That is not leading me towards living the life that I want though. And so that's not super useful. I'm not going to necessarily trust it, but I'm also not going to deny that it's how I feel. And so I'm going to reach out for help. I'm going to reach out for the support that I need because I'm not denying that part of me that feels that way. I also don't have to trust that it's true because that doesn't lead me in the direction of a kind and loving relationship with myself. But seeking out the support to navigate that difficulty absolutely does. All right, we took a little turn there. But hopefully you like this application of this idea of deconstruction. Maybe I'm grasping at straws, but I really enjoy contemplating this theory and how it relates to our experiences. I hope that in this little, you know, chat about this idea, that it's given you some food for thought to sort of think, okay, well, if this is true, that I am co-creating my movement experiences, that I am having a unique experience, what can I do with that information? How can I use that to my advantage? And how can I use it to give myself permission to kind of make space for what is true for me? All right, that's all I got for you this week. I hope that that is interesting, helpful, thought-provoking. Come and let me know. You'll find me over on Instagram. I'm at @ErikaWebb_selfkind. And a little plug for the Self-Kind Hub before I sign off. So as this, I'm just going to check the calendar, as this episode is going live, this is going to be coming out on the 1st of June, 2023. And if you're listening to it in real time, we're just about to have a price rise inside the Self-Kind Hub. And so if you've been thinking about joining us, now is a really good time. When you join the Self-Kind Hub, your membership price is locked in for the life of your membership. And so if you get in before the price goes up, you get to lock that price in for life. There's two tiers of membership, the basic level, which gives you access to all of the on-demand classes, the live stream classes, the master classes and their replays, guided audio, printable sessions, the whole thing. And there's the plus membership, which gives you all of that plus a monthly one-on-one counseling and coaching session with me. So you will find all the information via the link in my bio, and not my bio, in the show notes. So used to saying that on Instagram. If you have any questions, please feel free to reach out. That price rise is going to be going through on the 4th of June. So it's just a few days away from the time that this is landing. So if you've got any questions, you know you can come and find me over on Instagram. You can email me, erica@ericawebb.com.au. I would love to know what your takeaways from this episode are. And until next week, keep being kind to yourself. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Self-Kind. If you loved it, why not share it? And while you're there, take the time to subscribe, rate, and review the show. I'd love you to come hang out with me more too. You'll find me over on Instagram @ErikaWebb_selfkind. And you can sign up for my e-newsletter by heading to my website, ericawebb.com.au. While you're there, you can also read up more about the Self-Kind Hub and other ways of working with me. Until next time, keep being kind to yourself. Bye.